Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Oh, Dub Nation, what do you make of those comments? Plus this one right here from Kerr about not pushing all your chips in.
This does not feel like a time, in my estimation, I think in Mike's and Steph's and Draymond's, where you just you push all the chips in the middle and take a wild swing. That would be so irresponsible. So we're aware of that, but what does that mean? It means we are where we are. We're in the middle of the pack with a bunch of teams that are either good enough or not good enough, and we have to find out if we are. And by good enough, that means, you know, can you climb your way into the playoffs and give yourself a chance? And that's what we're trying to do.
So do you believe this team can work themselves out of a hole with Kuminga coming back in a week or two? GP2's back today. Do you believe this team could work themselves back? And is it the right tactic to maybe stand pat and recognize that, hey, you're not championship contenders, and maybe it would be reckless to make a move? Where do you stand with this, Dub Nation, after listening to those quotes from Steve Kerr, who, of course, joined Willard and Dibs yesterday right here at 95.7 The Game?
I just don't understand, like, what changed?
Yeah.
Well, like
sudden change?
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't understand. I don't get it. Like,
they all said something to back-to-back days.
Like, think about
it. Like, Draymond, Steph, and then Kerr. It all happened boom, boom, boom.
Think about what he was saying about Kuminga at a podium 2 months ago. And him yelling at Pajemski just a couple months ago. I mean, he showed more fight toward them than at any point I've ever seen pushback on Draymond. And quite frankly, it's ridiculous. I mean, like, this is ridiculous. This is what ends up happening, though, when you feel a sense of indebtedment you feel indebted to an individual. You almost can't critique them. And you, instead of being the coach and having some authority over someone, you're collaborating with them and you're afraid to critique. And you see this in lots of industries. You do. This is not unique to the NBA. And I understand. Yeah. But at the same time, Tom Brady, even though him and Belichick had a falling out, part of what made that work for as long as it did was that Belichick could push and critique and coach and yell at Tom Brady. And when you allow someone, I really truly believe the handling of Draymond needs to be studied. And I think it's the number one thing. Just the handling of Draymond throughout the last 6 or 7 years is the number one thing that got us to where we are. That's how I feel. Not that Draymond wasn't important. Not that Draymond didn't help them win. Not that they win without Draymond.
Why do you think that? The number one thing, Draymond. I want you to explain.
I think that this organization has enabled him and has bent over backwards to make him feel empowered while never punishing him. And I think it has created a culture of toxicity. I think it's created a culture of we can do whatever we want at the top and all you at the bottom don't matter as much as us. Mm-hmm. And the greatest teams, there's a togetherness.
Yep.
There's a unity. There is a chemistry. Now, I'm not saying everything's going to be kumbaya. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
I believe in creative tension. I believe in guys getting in guys' faces every now and then. But I do believe at times when one player is allowed to do just about anything he wants and anyone who steps in this guy's way at any moment could be cast away and literally will staple draft picks to get rid of you, even if you're important. Man, that sends a message.
Well, I would say this. A couple years ago, when the incident happened between Jordan Poole and Draymond Green, and we went into that year. And all season long, it just felt like it was the veterans and it was the youngsters. There's two different teams on one team. So to your point about having togetherness and chemistry, it felt like, hey, Kuminga, Wiggins, Poole, and Moody, you're over here to the side. You guys figure it out. I got Draymond. I have, you know, Steph and Clay and Wiggins. Now, Poole was oscillating because Poole would be in a lot of finishing lineups. But the youngsters are like, boy, our guy just got, you know, what's going on around here? What's going on? Do we have leeway to maybe make a mistake or two? Because it's ironic this year when you talk to a couple coaches, and I try to make my pregame rounds, And they're like, you know, the veterans got to do a better job at crunch time. It's the veterans. And we thought, I think back to 2 years ago, you and I were discussing this. Wait a minute, the youngsters didn't score 2 points in the final 5 minutes in South Beach, Miami. They didn't blow the 18-point lead in Orlando. Now, they may have given up some momentum, but come on. The veterans are playing down the stretch. You know, you look at all those games where the youngsters had nothing to do with the final 6-5 minutes because they weren't playing.
Mm-hmm.
And we still blame the youngsters as collectively.
Mm-hmm.
Collectively, we blame them. Not us, but a lot of people were like, yeah, the youngsters are not ready to hold things back. Trade these guys. When everybody said these guys can extend their careers, and now a lot of people say, well, two timelines don't work. I beg to differ. Forget the Celtics of the 80s when they tried it with Lynn Bias and Reggie Lewis. Just look at last decade with Coach Popovich and the San Antonio Spurs. They went to back-to-back NBA finals.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi Leonard, Danny Gray, Patty Mills, Thiago Splitter, they're all babies. They were babies, but they had their roles, right? They were able to play in big games. And Popovich was like, you know what? I'm going to roll with these guys. And by that next season, they ended LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, mm-hmm. and Chris Bosh and that Miami Heat team by smoking them in the NBA Finals. And think about Danny Green knocking down all those threes. I think he had a finals record for most made threes mm-hmm. at one point in the 7-game final series. Kawhi Leonard became a superstar. They empowered him. They worked on his shot. They let him play through his struggles offensively. And they empowered his strengths. You're going to be a lockdown defender. When LeBron James is in the game, you're going to be in the game. And you're going to guard LBJ. And you're going to annoy the living crap out of him for 48 minutes. So don't tell me that the two-timeline thing can't work. Because we saw it with San Antonio a decade ago. But it's the way you empower the youngsters. And I think coaching-wise, for whatever, and I get it with Steve, you got to win games. You're going to go down with your trusted vets, the guys who've won you championships, who've won you some of the biggest games of your career. I understand that wholeheartedly. But at the same time, we shouldn't be in year four discussing whether or not Moses Moody is a good player and whether or not Jonathan Kuminga can help you in the future. We're in year four in his tenure. And Wiseman's already been cast off. Poole's already been cast off. You cast off plenty of others. This is where we're at now. And so I think the mishandling, like this two-timeline thing, could have worked. But we didn't have the patience to see it work. And now we're here.
You know, it's really well said. It's so funny. Whenever you bring up Draymond, right, and I talk about Draymond, I'll always get the text. They don't win anything without him. Well, yeah. Yeah. But, like, was Dennis Rodman as a Laker the same Dennis Rodman as Dennis Rodman year one and year two with the Bulls?
No.
Okay.
No.
Lincecum is one of my favorite players of all time. 2010 Lincecum is unreal. By like 2016, 2017, is he the same Lincecum?
Nope.
No. And so sports, you have to pivot off of players. I had a tolerance for Charles Haley when he was one of the greatest sack masters in the game. When he was long in the tooth and it was 1999, mm-hmm. yeah, I didn't have a lot of tolerance for his shenanigans. If I'm running a team.
Right.
And that's the way I view Draymond. Yeah, I know. In 2015, he was awesome. I would say he was awesome at times, you know, even in 2021 and 2022. But everything comes to an end. And your tolerance level for an individual has to be adjusted based off what they're contributing to the floor.
Right.
And I feel like the juice wasn't worth the squeeze the last couple of years, and they held on too long.
Well, you know
it's
what?
Pretty obvious to see to me.
Well, you know what?
Think about Antonio Brown before I go. Yeah. Think about Antonio Brown. The Steelers had a lot of tolerance
right.
when Antonio Brown was an all-pro wide receiver.
Right.
Once he stopped going to all-pros, okay, boy, the Tampa Bay Bucs couldn't wait to get rid of him.
No. Right? He walked off the field.
This is sports. I don't know. Just
well, this is from a basketball sense, because it started in the Sacramento series. When we win that series, and we talked about the too big lineup, and everybody's like, what the hell are you talking about? And I say, look, in this series against Sacramento, it gets up and down. Looney and Draymond, you got to pick a lane.
Yeah.
You got to go one big, and you got to match their speed and athleticism. You got to get up and down. And they went too big lineup, and they lost the first two games of that series, and Draymond got popped for game three. At game three, they go into that one with the one big lineup. Kevon Looney, and they went Poole, Wiggins, Clay, and Steph. And boy, they were rolling. And Draymond came back for game four. Even though he dropped a triple-double, he was coming off the bench with that. And then you play the L.A. Lakers, and the two big lineups, mm-hmm. when you have non-shooting, look where Anthony Davis was kept out at. So my position is, as a just pure basketball, I understand what Draymond Green does defensively. I understand what he does in a half court. But Anthony Davis is camping out under the rim, daring you to shoot. And they're not in a triple threat position. If you notice in today's game, you go look at the Houston Rockets. Mm-hmm. You go look at Oklahoma City. You go look at Denver. You go look at Dallas. You go look at Cleveland. They have balance and they have triple threat players on any given. Anybody on that team in that lineup, they're running with combinations where at least you have four threats offensively. We watched the Warriors led by Draymond Green and then you get GP2. You got a lot of specialists here. That's not going to win you a lot of basketball games today. So just from the basketball sense, I thought you had a chance to move off stylistically and adjust your style and move on to the future. And maybe that future was with Kuminga, Poole, Curry, Wiggins, Clay. I have no idea. But that style of play, where you are running your two-man game with Stephen Curry, but you have to be a threat offensively. And too many times, night in and night out, Draymond Green's not a threat offensively. And that hurts your half-court offense, and it kills your spacing.
What was the game the other night where I lost my mind? Draymond's in the corner.
Last minute of the game. He was wide open.
He's wide open. And, of course, the ball's going to go to you because you're wide open. He doesn't even look at the hoop.
That's what I'm talking about.
And he goes to fire it back to somebody else, and it gets picked off because the other team knows he's so afraid to shoot late in games. Nope. I would love to just see the raw attempts from beyond the key in the fourth quarter.
Oh, it's down.
In terms of like the breakdown between first, second, third, and fourth quarter.
I've tracked this last year.
Okay, have you tracked it?
Yeah, last year he was like, it's night and day. It's night and day.
It's just, and no one is saying that he doesn't have usefulness. There is a usefulness to him. But to say that he's allowed the same equity and the same minutes and all this, like you wouldn't do this in any other type of sport where this guy's getting long in the tooth. Let's use him the exact same way we've used him for the last decade. Like, nah, it needs to be adjusted.
It does.
Especially when you have other younger players who you can adjust to, who bring a little more to the table on both ends of the floor.
Well, if the youngsters were empowered, maybe Draymond Green is playing the Iguodala role. Maybe he is playing the Livingston role at this point. And maybe he's not getting $100 million. But here's the problem I think a lot of fans have is that, look, Jordan Poole is a very popular player right here. Many people don't believe that. I was at Chase Center every day. The second biggest pop in that stadium was with Jordan Poole whenever he did something. There was a pool party. Literally wearing sunscreen at the demo at NBC Sports Bay Area wearing floaties with Grant Liffman. Talking about it's a pool party. We couldn't get enough of Jordan Poole. We couldn't get enough of him. And that situation happened in training camp. And it doesn't look right. Obviously, those guys couldn't share a locker room anymore. It was obvious. They're not going to get along. And how could you blame them? That's Draymond still talking about, like, damn, I screwed that up. Yeah. Yeah, it got screwed up. But you empowered him by extending him and knowing where the league was going. It doesn't feel like the brightest move. Now, you could pivot off of that at some point here. And we'll see if that happens, but it just leaves a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Well, I think one of the most underreported, underdiscussed, under speculated dynamics isn't even Draymond and the youngsters. I think it's Draymond and Clay. Mm. And what I mean with that is like what Draymond and how he's viewed in the organization and how that's evolved over time or how little it's evolved over time versus how Clay's relationship on his own team, his role, his worth to the organization, how that evolved over time, and then their dynamic amongst each other, and then just your normal, not jealousy, but like, hey, we did this together. Why is he being viewed this way? Right. And I'm being viewed this way. Why is he allowed to do this? Why am I not allowed to do that? Why are you giving him these things financially, organizationally, and why am I being shortchanged? Well, why am I being treated different from someone that I believe is my equal?
So now,
or then maybe I'm better. I don't know. Now, but like, I just think that that dynamic, the Dre Clay dynamic, is very under speculated.
Well, this is I tried to spit this last season. It wasn't about the money. I banged the table every single day on the show saying, everybody saying, well, he's getting 2 for $48, $24 million. It wasn't about the money. It was the years. It was like, wait a minute, okay. Took care of Wiggins, took care of Poole. And it kind of comes to a form of pop and watching, but Klay Thompson's coming in saying, man, I just led the league in threes. And now if you want to pit both of them together, Draymond and Klay Thompson. Yeah. Draymond was coming off the season in which we know what happened.
Yes.
With Jordan Poole. Klay's coming off a season where, despite guys being hurt, we forget Jordan Poole and Klay Thompson helped stabilize that season in early January when guys are out. Klay had the 54-point game, and Poole was finding his game, and they were working well together. And the rumor started that Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson can't stand Jordan Poole. Klay Thompson loved Jordan Poole to the point where Klay Thompson's older brother, Michael Thompson, worked out Jordan Poole before every game.
Yeah.
You think if Klay Thompson hated Jordan Poole, that Michael Thompson would be warming up Jordan Poole before games?
Probably not.
Probably not. And people didn't want to listen to that. It was about the years. It was like, wait a minute. If you say you're loyal to the core and keeping everybody here, then why am I only getting a 2-year extension? And I'm getting less money than Draymond Green when I'm getting buckets. This league is about getting buckets. So that whole dynamic there with Klay and everything, that was the most underreported thing where it's like, it's about the years, dude. He wanted the respect of the years.
What I always found fascinating is like, we spent, and I'm not you and me, but even though I would bring up some of it, but like, I think the bulk of the fan base we heard from wanted to discuss the psyche of Klay Thompson. And yet we like, oh, but that's just Dre being Dre. It's like, wait a minute. If we're going to start doing the psyche thing, let's do the psyche thing across the board. Because there's a lot of psychosis going on. No,
let's go to the call.
And I'm just going
to
put it out there.
No doubt.
You get where I'm going?
Yeah, no, I trust me. I understand 100%.